Hi, I'm Dylan Sprayberry, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Woo!
I know he knows that he's killing me for mercy, and here I go. Oh, 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 oh.
Everyone, and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast number 139. Today we're going to be talking about Teen Wolf Season 6, Episode 7, Heartless. I'm Karen, joined by Natalie. We're doing this a little bit earlier this time, so hopefully it'll be before Sunday when you guys hear this episode.
It will be before Sunday.
Yeah. As usual, if you would like to get into contact with us, you can hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at NATW Podcast. Our email is natwpodcast@gmail.com, and you can find us on Tumblr at notanotherteenwolfpodcast.com.
I'd also like to announce that as of a couple of weeks ago, as well as being able to download on iTunes, as we always have been, Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast is also now available through Stitcher, which is a podcast listening app, which I'm told is, like, a very big deal for the future of podcasting. I don't know why. Apparently, it just is. It's an app in which you can, like, I think you can stream podcasts sort of officially and stuff like that. And apparently, a lot of people are using it on their phones instead of the iTunes player on their phones because it doesn't work. Apparently the Apple iTunes player doesn't work that well on some phones. Anyway, Jack told me we had to be on Stitcher, so I applied and we're on. So if anyone is using Stitcher rather than iTunes to listen to their collection of podcasts, you can follow us on that as well. So that's thrilling news. It does look pretty nice, so hopefully it's legit. We don't have any ratings on there yet, but compared to our lovely iTunes ratings, but if anyone is using that app as a preference, check it out, and you can give us the same lovely feedback on Stitcher that you would have on iTunes. Very thrilling. Nice.
Cool. I hadn't heard about this before now, and also have not looked into it at all. So I trust Natalie, though, and I trust Jack, so
yeah.
Do your thing.
It plays pretty smoothly, so I don't know about iTunes like phone compatibility, but this does play pretty well on Android and iTunes and iPhone and anything else if you are using it on your phone. So yeah, very exciting. And Not About the Weather's also on that one as well, so we have two shows under our account there.
Awesome. Well, let's jump into quotes now, and Nat, I'm just gonna let you run wild because I agree with everything you have here.
I really loved this episode, Karen. Like, it was, there was a point where it ended and I was like, is that the end? It felt so full, and then it kept going. Like, basically there was I think one of the Peter scenes, like, blacked out, and then I was just like, is that it? And then it kept going. This episode was so full. I really loved it. It might have been my favorite of the season so far. But I, in terms of quotes, I was just like, I was writing stuff down from the beginning. I was like, I had so many, like Theo at the beginning, like, you know, I even wrote down, like his whole, it's so awkward when mom and dad fight. But basically I had every single line of Peter's, starting with the whole to Melissa, you know, we never did have that second date.
Yes.
But also at the end, when him and Malia are kind of running through the forest and arguing about Styles, and he's like, what is he? Is he your human crutch? And she's like, no, he's my anchor. And he's like, well, get you a new anchor. And it sounds like so dad-like, like so much like a, you know, a dad, you know, oh, we'll just get you a new doll, honey. Like, it's fine. Like, you know, a rich dad with a spoiled kid. And it reminded me of that so much. And I found it very funny. My favorite moment above and beyond all quotes was when they pull Peter into the elevator, him and Malia and Melissa, that's a mouthful, Malia and Melissa pull Peter into the elevator, and she just kicks the buttons to close it, like she just like really naturalistically uses her foot to kick the buttons, and I just love her. And I don't know, like, I want to know how thought out that is, like, by, you know, whether it's the, you know, scripted or whether it's Shelley, like, you know, or if it's the director, like, how those moments get created, because it was totally right and not a big deal at all, but just so funny and so perfect. So that
I actually rewound the elevator scene to watch it twice because I loved it so much.
I called Leo. I was like, Leo, you have to come and watch this scene right now. And rewound it. And I was just like grinning and holding the computer out because it was it was so, so good. They always do good scenes in elevators. Elevator comedy is really great for this show. Like, they always have their points.
We should rank the elevator scenes
in Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
And then a final shout out to Liam when they caught the Ghost Rider. And he was like, they're trying to talk to him, and he's like, Mr. Ghost Rider, Mr. Rider. And I fully thought he was going to say, Sir. They didn't go to the Sir place, but oh my God. Again, like, finding comedy in that moment was just so ridiculous, and I want to know who the script writer is for this particular episode, or who was responsible for these quotes, because it's funny, Teen Wolf, one thing I've been noticing, obviously we know a lot of the writers of Teen Wolf, and over the years, you know, various people have been in the writing room that we've known better, better or not as well, but so with Supernatural, the behind the scenes people in Supernatural, like, you know, like the executive producer and all of those people on their Twitter, as the episodes come up week to week, they'll be like, this week's episode is written by the fantastic whoever, if you know what I mean. They really promo the writers of the individual episodes in the lead up to the release of the episode. And I think with Supernatural, that is because they are actually written pretty exclusively in a bubble. Like, if someone writes an episode, it's just their work, as opposed to it being on, like, Teen Wolf, where they sort of craft the story together and someone kind of fills in the gaps and that's whose name ends up getting slapped on the episode. So, like, the individual content of each episode isn't necessarily always just one writer's. But Teen Wolf doesn't really do that with the writers. It doesn't say, oh, this week's episode, you know, someone might go on Twitter, like Will might go on Twitter and be like, you know, this is my episode this week, but they don't, like, make it part of the promo for the show, whereas Supernatural does. And I find that really interesting. And I don't know, odd. I love screenwriters in general, so I like that, you know, they get promo. I think it's the most underrated aspect of creating television and film, like the screenwriting, in general. They're never, like, the big names. It's always like director or actor. Anyway, that was just a tangent. I'd like to know who was responsible for this, basically.
Yeah, there were so many good lines and so many nonverbal cues in this episode that were just brilliant. One of my favorite scenes was when Malia and Melissa, right before the elevator scene, are with Peter and he's still burned. And they, like, walk in and Malia's saying something and he's like, I can still hear you, you know, but they walk into it and he's like, yeah, well, how are you going to help me? And Melissa's like, I've got something for that, and stabs him so violently with that vial of the nine herb, like, mixture, which she took so much pleasure in doing that, by the way. But then Malia goes, think it's working? And Melissa just says, should be. Looks painful enough. And the way that she just, like, they're total so straight-faced. Like, yeah, like, they really don't care that he is suffering right now.
Yeah.
It's quite hilarious. But it was great. And this episode, I can't say that it's, like, one of my favorites. I mean, maybe one of my favorites, but not my favorite of the season. But I will say that the cold open was really intense, and that definitely caught my attention from the beginning.
And really long, and like
it was.
Yeah.
It was so long, but this is Theo's, like, I called it his dream, but I want to say that it's almost like a hallucination or something, because he imagines his sisters killing him over and over and over again, ripping his heart out, taking back what is hers, because we get the flashback of what happened with his sister. And after so many times of going through this, he kind of gives in, and he says, eventually he tells her, it's okay, you don't have to stop. And I really liked that moment, because I feel like Theo is kind of coming to terms with what he's done and accepting his punishment. And I'm hoping that this means that he's changing.
I think he completely is. Like, I think that he's come back, like, totally different. You know, like right from the resurrection, I guess. And I'm assuming that this is what he was experiencing in, well, it's not quite hell, but we kind of learn what it is, which is that, you know, that he was with the Skinwalkers, which we'll talk about more in a moment, or he's, like, in, you know. So I'm assuming this is kind of his version of the, you know, vision quest-y kind of thing that Kira went through, but, you know, done as a torture. So, yeah, I assume this is just his version of quote-unquote hell, or what he would experience as his kind of, like, eternal punishment. And...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So creepy. Like, this is, it actually scared me. Teen Wolf doesn't always scare me. They push the envelope a little bit. We're like, oh yeah, that's really creepy. But the way that the sister, like, walked, the way that she just showed up out of nowhere, like, I definitely jumped one time because it just scared the crap out of me. But they did a really good job of incorporating that horror element that they usually do incorporate, but they kind of stepped it up a little bit in this episode.
Yeah, it was pretty nasty, and I don't know, I think that there is something different about him in general. I think it's a different look in his eye. I don't know, like, I think that, like, for the past however many seasons Theo has been in, he's kind of, this is, like, really, I don't know, nitpicky or weird, but he has, his constant expression has been kind of narrow-eyed, if you know what I mean, and I think that that's literally... you know, an acting choice. I think that is, you know, well, this is what he looks like. This is the kind of smirk he has on his face at all times. And he was so wide-eyed in this episode that at a moment I had to pause it and was like, is that actually Cody Christian? Is that actually Theo? Because it changed his face so much. That he had these kind of wide eyes being lit differently. Like, he is being narratively portrayed as an innocent, or at least as a repentant kind of, you know, guilty, in pain person, like the way that they're making him look, like, physically. So I feel like he, you know, he looks different, he feels different, and that he 100%, not only is changing, has changed, and the fight is going to be to get people to believe that.
Yeah, I think for the first time, really, except for maybe right at the end of season 5, Theo is actually afraid, and Theo doesn't have a backup plan. Like, that's always been a big thing with him, is, like, he's always kind of known what to do, and he's always had a plan B. Right now, he's literally just trying not to get sent back to hell, and he will do whatever it takes to do that, but I agree. I think he is changing. I think he saw what his actions did and, for the first time, maybe realized what he did to his sister.
Yeah.
And that is literally haunting him, and I hope that continues to change him, because I like Theo as a character. I mean, I love to hate him because he is very good at being bad, but he's also really funny, really sassy. He says things that nobody else says, and he kind of knows how to needle people in a way that not a whole lot of the other characters do. I think Peter very much comes off that way too, and that's the reason why we like Peter. So I like Theo's personality when he's not being, you know, evil. Murderous. Yeah, exactly. So if he can come back, still retain what we like about him, but attempt to be a good person, I'm in. I'm excited.
I think it is, and I think that it's just going to be a matter of getting, you know, others to believe that he's worth that.
Yeah, which is, like, kind of the whole point of this beginning scene, too, yeah. Because after he comes out of his hallucination or whatever it is, we see that Malia is beating him up, and they kind of have to stop her, but Scott's also like, look, we're sending him right back. And Liam sticks to his guns. He says, no, I think that Theo is an asset. He knows about the Wild Hunt. He remembers Styles. Liam doesn't trust him, but he knows that he can be useful, and he wants to use him to capture the Ghost Rider, but also to figure out, like, what's going on with Styles and if they can get him back. Scott doesn't like the situation, but he decides to trust him, and I think that's pretty big.
Yeah. It was interesting to me that Scott was, like, that they were basically willing to not kill him, but to throw him back in the hole, if you know what I mean. That they were, like,
yeah,
kind of, because that happened to him. It's something we've talked about on Buffy, like, for Rewatchable, is the whole, like, doing things in cold blood versus not, like, you know, letting a hero, you know, the reason that they never killed Spike, even when he was evil, was that it would have been in cold blood. If we would, you know, they were keeping him captive for however many months. They know he was a murderer. They know he did all of this stuff, but there was never a point when any of them were like, hey, I'm just going to, like, execute you, because it makes the hero look bad, even if they would have no qualms having killed him in a fight. Theo went into the ground in the midst of a big hoo-ha, you know, like, and it was interesting to me that Scott was, like, fully on board with, like, we are going to, in cold blood, open that up and shove you back in the hole and bury you alive and leave you in hell. Like, that was really interesting to me, that they were, like, okay with that, if you know what I mean. Like, they didn't not do that because, oh, we can't do that to him, we have to give him a chance, or, like, you know, oh, it would be too mean. Like, it was, they were, like, Scott was, like, fully, yeah, let's just do that.
And I think makes a big difference that they're talking about this right after he's been resurrected. I bet, like, two or three episodes from now, they're going to feel differently about that. They're going to be he has helped us. He's been back for a while. He's being good. Like, maybe this isn't the right course of action kind of thing, versus, like, okay, he was resurrected. That was a mistake. If we put him back really fast, then it doesn't change anything.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's still interesting that, you know, to me, that they would do, yeah, such a sort of a calculated, harsh thing, basically. But yeah. I like it. Like, it's interesting. It's not very black and white, and it's in terms of, like, oh, that's a, you know, a good guy thing. But yeah, it's really interesting. I would have liked to sort of see them get to that point of, like, actually opening up the chasm, and if anyone was like, no, we can't do this, or if Scott would have literally been, like, into the hole with you.
This, you know, is Beacon Hills, oh, and God. Sparta kicks him.
Oh, dear. they didn't put him back in the hole, not because they were like, oh, we can't just put him back in the hole now that he's here. You know, it's, a lot of the time it's like, it's not that the bad guy doesn't deserve it, it's that we don't want to sink to the level of being so bad to just, you know, we don't want to be the murderers or, you know, the cold blood killers. They were totally fine about being the cold blood hole pushers, so... but it was just that Liam is convinced that, you know, or at least he's kind of sticking by his own decision and finding ways to rationalize his own decision, that they need, him for the Ghost Riders, and that they, you know, that he remembers Styles. It was interesting to me that Malia was like, we remember Styles, because they don't, like, they know that he existed, but they don't have their full memories of him back, do they? Like, they're not just being like, oh, we remember everything and now we're trying to convince people. Like, they don't actually have, like, oh yeah, like that guy, unlike Theo, who was completely unaffected by the Ghost Riders and has his full memory, presumably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Malia is just so beyond reason at this point. She just wants to kill him. I mean, she doesn't just want to shove him back in the hole. Like, she wants to murder him with her bare hands. So... I think she'll pretty much say anything at this point.
Again, no one's kind of, like, ever pulls Malia up on the whole murdering thing. I mean, she never gets to do it, but no one's like, Malia, we don't murder people, it's wrong, you know? Like, they kind of are like, Malia, don't kill him. But it's never... But they're still willing to kind of use her as a threat. Like, oh yeah, if you do this, we'll promise Malia won't kill you. Like, are they just going to let her kill people at some point?
I doubt it. But speaking of, you know, shoving him back in the hole and everything, you mentioned this earlier. We learn in this episode that he was with the Skinwalkers, and that's sort of been his punishment. And in a way, like, obviously this makes sense. We know that Kira was connected to them, and she was the one, and her sword helped send him to wherever he was going, but it was never really specified what exactly happened to him. We knew, like, he was dead, but not gone. He was removed, but not necessarily, like, out of reach, obviously, because they brought him back. And I just think, like, this is kind of cool because I love the Skinwalkers and I would love to see them again. And I also wonder, like, what he can tell us about them, what he can tell us about Kira, like, if he knows anything, if they're going to kind of drop a couple of lines in there, which would be kind of pointless because we know Kira's not coming back, but also just nice to remember that, you know, she's still kind of around.
I mean, I don't think that he was just like hanging out in Skinwalker's underground cavern. I think that, like, they, you know, he was in his own personal hell, and that, you know, maybe they do this for lots of people. Maybe there's, like, they have lots of weird captives under the ground who are in personal hell.
Morbid, but interesting. Yeah. Well, either way, Theo is back now. They're going to keep him around for a little while. They do put him in chains, so what we were discussing last week was definitely real. It was pretty great.
There's no reason for it not to have been real, but I was just looking at it being like, is this actually happening right now? Yeah. And it was.
It was great. I liked that Liam kept jerking the chains, and Theo was just like, ugh, this is the worst.
I love, who thought of this solution? Like, probably Liam, to be honest. He's like, responsible for him. Here, he can wear these. I'll carry him around on a leash.
Which, actually, I really like that he's taking to heart this whole idea of, like, he is responsible for Theo now. And I like that Scott is letting him, trusting him to be responsible for Theo, because Theo's wily. And if he really wanted to, I think that he could get away or he could cause issues for them. But he's either really afraid or turning over a new leaf. And the fact that he kind of just goes along with the whole thing speaks volumes. And he is helping them because he takes them to a transformer, which can conduct the lightning and help them capture a Ghost Rider.
So what is this transformer? Is this where Tankwolf was?
No.
Was the transformer, is that, so that was another shed in the woods?
I think so.
How many sheds in the woods are there in Beacon Hills?
I mean, they've got that preserve. Like, maybe this is just...
Oh, like a lightning protector cage in the preserve to stop the trees catching fire?
Well, it was an old sort of abandoned place, I think they said, for like one of these transformers. I think it was definitely at one point something that a company used, and then they ended up not needing it or moved on to something else, and so that's why it was kind of all covered in the ivy and everything like that. So convenient, obviously, but still useful.
Mm. Yeah, so the capture of the Ghost Rider was a little confusing to me. There was a lot of science once again.
there was so much science, and you know what? I actually really liked it. It felt so real. Like, I'm sure it was real. I'm sure that it was scientifically based, because everything they said made sense, like, between the electromagnetism and the lightning rod and why it wasn't going to blow up and all of that. Like, it all made sense, but it was a lot of science. And I love that they always bring in Mason when they have a lot of science to deal with.
We need to get, like, Mythbusters on a Teen Wolf, like analysis, and get all of the, like, theoretical science of the show and be like, is this real? Like,
yeah.
Like, in theory, is this real? And see, like, which of it holds up scientifically and stuff like that.
I mean, to me, it makes a lot of sense, because obviously lightning rods are used to conduct lightning, to bleed it somewhere, which is exactly what they did. The Ghost Rider came down, they put it in the cage. We know that, you know, electromagnetism can keep out, like, that is a barrier. So it makes sense that he wouldn't be able to latch back onto the lightning if he wasn't able to reach it through that barrier. So it was a lot to explain in like 60 seconds or however long it took, but I'm kind of glad that they did, because it just makes it feel more real.
Was there an explanation as to how they got lightning to strike?
Between the lightning rod, the incoming storm, I think it was sort of coincidence, but
it was waiting for a strike to hit it.
Yeah, and they probably knew that, like, the Ghost Riders would come for them, so
yeah.
I think the Ghost Riders have some control over where they can strike, because they obviously striked purposely at the lacrosse game, so yeah. If they knew the group was there, then
yeah,
kind of makes sense. But I was glad to see Mason and Corey again, and there's a little part at the end that I want to talk about with them, but before that actually happens, they do catch the Ghost Rider. Theo actually does help, so he could have left him.
He saved the day!
He did.
Scott was stuck, and everyone was stuck, and he was the one!
He was the one.
It's they're being so mean to him. I know he murdered like a ton of people, but people change, and I don't know. They need to believe that. No, they have every right not to believe that, but we narratively are convinced of that. So it's frustrating to see people be mean to him. But I don't know.
So it went off fairly smoothly, except for the door thing. So, like, good on them, because that could have been much worse.
When they closed it up, they all looked really proud of themselves. They were all like, we fucking did it! Like, you know, like, they were all really pleased that they'd actually accomplished this and that their weird plan had worked. And so I kind of liked that little moment of, like, them all smiling at each other, being like, yeah, we are geniuses!
Like, guys, I really didn't think that this would work, but it did.
Yeah.
I also liked that Scott swiped the Ghost Rider's gun. I feel like that might be important later on.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of bits with the various weapons which are interesting. So, at the moment, we know that does the gun just send people to the train station? Is that, like, kind of what happens with the gun? Or, like, mark them for later? Or because in Kanan they were shooting people and they were kind of vanishing in a puff.
It does send them
to
if
away.
They're hit with the bullet. Yeah. But it's also a real quote-unquote real bullet too, like it can destroy things.
Yeah,
but also we know that, like, between the different dimensions or whatever, sometimes that destruction is only in one place, not necessarily in the real world. I'm thinking of when they shot at Styles, the bullet holes in the door disappeared. But they also had fragments of the windshield, which had, like, the green dust on it or whatever. It was blue from whatever is going on with the gun. So it can be real as well. So they're trying to get the Ghost Rider to talk. He's not really saying anything, maybe because his mouth is like half melted together. But
I don't feel like they realize... speak English. Like if he'd just been like, yes, we are the whatever, leave me alone, I would have been like, what the hell, if it had just started to talk. I did not expect it to start to talk.
Yeah, that was interesting. But they realize that they need to get Parrish in order to get the Ghost Rider to talk. So they bring him in, and it knows what Parrish is, which we kind of already realized, talked about before. My big question here is, what the hell does the Ghost Rider say to Parrish? Because it is English. I can hear words. I wrote down some of what he said, but because all the different voices kind of come together, like, I couldn't really understand.
It sounded to me like he was saying, those who ride with us, like, ride forever. That's what I got from it.
Yeah. Like, that. And I heard We Are the Wild Hunt several times.
Yeah, it was.
And something about, like, we hunt forever, those who hunt with us.
It was forever. Yeah, it was, We Are the Wild Hunt, those who hunt with us hunt forever, is what I got. And this is exactly, like, I don't remember how much we talked about this in the party scene when Parrish was there, about, like, the conflict between the two of them, but I remember thinking at the time and talking a little at the time about whether Parrish is against them or whether he is with them or under their control or if he's fighting their control.
Right.
I think I remember saying maybe the Ghost Rider is scared of Parrish because it knows what Parrish can do because it, like, is a, you know, because the Hellhounds are usually under their control. So it knows that the Hellhound is powerful and it's like one of your own dogs turning on you. So the Hellhounds, you know, in this mythology are part of the Wild Hunt. And it seems like that they are, you know, we know that when Parrish goes into his supernatural form, it's not like Scott, it's like a whole, you know, split personality. He doesn't really know what he's doing. But it would seem that the Hellhound is, you know, uncontrollably loyal in some way to the Wild Hunt, or is able to be controlled by its masters, you know, in the Ghost Riders. So that was what I sort of got from that. And yeah, that whole relationship is something that I wondered about in their first interaction. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And we'll get to what happens with Parrish momentarily, because that was interesting. But the other thing I want to talk about with what the Ghost Rider was saying, they asked him, what do you want? Did you hear his response? Because I swear he said something along the lines of, like, we want the one that escaped.
No, I didn't. Do you think they mean Peter, or, like, what?
That's, like, I could have totally misheard them because, like, seriously, I had to listen to it, like, 6 times and I still don't know what they said. I'm going to try, like, maybe putting on subtitles or something. But initially, I thought they said something about, like, we want the one that escaped. And I was like, okay, obviously Peter. But then I was like, well, the Ghost Riders have been stuck in Beacon Hills for a little while. Maybe somebody else escaped. Maybe Mr. Douglas escaped.
Yeah, someone in the past or something like that.
Yeah, and so they're there until they can get the person that previously escaped.
Yeah, that would make some amount of sense, yeah.
But maybe I totally misheard it, so take that with a grain of salt.
Mr. Douglas is an interesting case because maybe he was taken and then came out and then picked up by the Dread Doctors, and the tank was their way of, like, keeping him alive when he was all, like, screwed up like Peter was, if he was all burned or something like that.
Yeah, true. And they would definitely want to study somebody like him, so that makes sense. Before we get to Mr. Douglas, back to Parrish. Parrish seems to kind of go under the Ghost Rider's control, tries to set him free, but Liam and Scott stop him. This, we have been talking a lot about, like, okay, who's above who, and is the Hellhound definitely a servant of the Ghost Rider? I think that seems to be the case. And I just want to know, like, okay, they kind of knocked him on his butt outside, and he ended up running away and tells them not to follow. That felt very much like Parrish, but it also felt like Parrish knew something. And I'm like, is he trying to meet up with the other writers? Is he afraid of what he just did and, like, doesn't want to talk to them about it?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, he knows that he's doing something, you know, outside of his personal, you know, Parrish control. So that he's trying to, like, save them from that. But I don't know. Or just to get away from the situation in general so he won't be able to betray them. Like, running away out of town or something like he's tried to do before. Yeah. In order to not betray them.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I definitely thought Parrish was going to be a bigger part of the story so far. I mean, we're 7 episodes in, and I'm very surprised that he hasn't played a bigger role, but maybe they're kind of saving it up for later until come back in a big way, because he is so related to the Wild Hunt that I'm just shocked that they haven't, like, explored more of that yet. But maybe it'll be forthcoming. Okay, let's talk about Mr. Douglas, because we learned some stuff about him this week, which was pretty interesting. He shows up to battle the Ghost Rider and immediately kind of drops his facade when he's around Theo. He has a German accent, so that's a development. I thought maybe he'd only have one in the past, but it was definitely accented here. And we see him as an alpha werewolf, and his makeup, in my opinion, was a much more classic sort of werewolf getup, and I actually really liked it. I mean, he was ugly as hell, yeah. But, like, I really liked it.
Yeah, he had a lot more prosthetics on his face. Like, he looked more kind of Frankenstein-y than some of the others. But, you know, we've seen different extremes for different kinds of people. And really different werewolf transformations for various kinds of people. But yeah, there he is. And how many people saw him as a werewolf? Just Theo? Or?
Yes.
Yeah. And, so he obviously knows, you know, as we said, like, last week, you know, one-on-one scene between those two where they would acknowledge, you know, something, and here it is. So Theo doesn't seem too fond of him. It's not like they're like, oh, my old buddy, you know?
They're definitely wary of each other, which I think is interesting. The most interesting part for me wasn't that Theo recognized him, because of course he would know, like, the Nazi werewolf was in the tank, but that Mr. Douglas seemed to recognize and know exactly who Theo was.
Did he get him out and talk to him and stuff? Like, was the
tank? That's what I'm wondering.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'm wondering, because that is quite the interesting development. And Theo tells him, maybe you should tell them, the pack, who you really are, Hauptmann. Hauptmann, yeah. I think is how he pronounced it, yeah. Which means captain in German. So, like, we already kind of knew that he was a German soldier, a Nazi. So this wasn't, like, a revelation or anything, but clearly shows that Theo has extensive knowledge of who Mr. Douglas really was.
And so he comes. Does he actually contribute anything? I'm trying to think. So before the eating of the head, so they have that little face-off. He just shows
he
up
attacks.
Because he wants to rob the Ghost Rider, basically, and eat him.
Yes, and he does attack Theo, but doesn't kill him.
No. Does he attack Theo? Why is Theo there on his own? Like, did they just leave him to guard the cage?
Because Liam and Scott took Parrish outside.
Oh,
and
it's only for a few Theo moments. Just,
yeah, Theo just kind of was left over. Yeah.
How convenient, Mr. Douglas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, he just shows up at the perfect time. And you know he was scoping it out, so, like, it's not, you know, surprising or anything, but he knows how to play the game, and he's definitely taking some risks, because clearly he, I guess now he's not so worried about the fact that they know who he is, but he wanted to get the Ghost Rider alone, and Theo isn't that much of a threat at this point, so he does attack the Ghost Rider. eats his pineal gland, which was much bigger than the other one we saw, right? Like, the other one was the size of a pea. This one, he had to, like, take multiple bites of it.
Ew.
It was another very gross episode, by the way. So I don't know necessarily what the significance of a bigger gland would be, other than the fact that the Ghost Riders are maybe, like, obviously more immortal, if that has something to do with it.
Yeah, it could just be overdeveloped or something like that. Like, I'm really...
Or if they take souls and this gland is supposed to be, like... Weren't we talking about before that this is, like, the seat of your soul?
Yes. So, like,
so it could be...
Something.
Yeah, it could be engorged because they've taken so many souls. It is.
Envisioning it.
But this is so interesting because when he does eat the gland, his eyes turn green, just like, you know, the poofs of smoke that we've been seeing people disappear into.
Was it when
into.
He ate the gland or was he when he whipped Corey?
It was later, but it was after he ate the gland.
See,
I read
that very differently. So keep going because I actually have a really different interpretation of this.
Oh, okay. I assumed that his eyes were green because of the gland, because he stole it from the Ghost Rider specifically. It was after he ate the gland, and it was before, like, his eyes lit up, and then he attacked Corey.
Okay. Interesting. I read it as, do Corey's eyes ever go a color when he's being the chameleon? Because his powers are kind of green as well. This is probably totally wrong in that case, but I read it is that he took the whip, he took the Ghost Rider's whip, and he whipped Corey, and he took Corey's power into him, and that his eyes went green because he now had the power that Corey had, and I thought that maybe there was, like, a link of the Ghost Riders being able, the Ghost Riders' whips being able to do this was what gave the Dread Doctors the idea to start making the Chimeras. Like, if you know what I mean, like, that there was some sort of, like, that this was the quote-unquote natural world thing that made the Dread Doctors get ideas to start experimenting for their own stuff with, like, taking powers from various people. So that might be totally wrong, and Corey could have just been taken as per normal, but I saw whip Corey, green eyes, and assumed it was, like, him imbibing Corey, basically, into himself, and that's why he wanted the whip, to get powers from people, or to get them, you know, to take power in the traditional way, in the way that the Dread Doctors were working on recreating.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't think about it that way, but yeah, I tried looking it up. I don't think Corey's eyes change when he goes invisible, or maybe, like, we don't see it because he's invisible.
Yeah. I could be totally wrong, but yeah, that's fine.
Interesting. Okay. So yeah, I mean, either way, Mr. Douglas makes Corey disappear, which is awful, but maybe he'll get to hang out with Styles. And to kind of go back to somewhere earlier in the episode, Mason and Corey are talking about the fact that Mason knows where Corey is when he's invisible. He can see him. He can see the light refraction around Corey's figure. And he says, it's my only superpower, finding you, which was very, for people who watch Once Upon a Time, like, very charming and Snow White. So, like, I kind of rolled my eyes. It was a little cheesy.
Yeah, it was very cute and gross.
It was very cute and gross. I liked it, but yeah. And I'm just wondering, like, will this be important now that Corey has been taken? Will Mason remember Corey? Will they all, because they kind of know how the Ghost Riders work now?
I don't know.
And will Mason actually be able to find Corey? Or was that just a cute line?
Are they going to remember that he existed?
Well, I'm just wondering if it's foreshadowing somehow.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I'm going to assume that it was, but who knows? And maybe now Mason will be in more episodes.
Yeah. But also, Corey's powers are maybe not connected to the Ghost Riders, but are definitely helpful and kind of work in a similar way, in that obviously when he goes invisible, he can see the Ghost Riders even when they're not seen by other people.
Yeah.
So if he's been taken, if he's now in the train station, I wonder if his abilities will allow him to send out messages. Can he travel?
If he could bring back stuff from the Ghost Riders' reality, like that card, could he bring back the whole bunch of people?
Maybe.
Like, can we follow the human chain and then Corey, like, you know? And then he brings them all back.
Although he's not the only one that can do that, which we've seen in this episode.
True.
Although I do really like that theory, because that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
So that wraps up, like, the main part of the episode, but we have two other sort of side plots going on. The first one being that Malia really doesn't want to trust Theo, and therefore kind of finds her own way to save Stiles, which means that clearly she trusts Peter more than she trusts Theo, which is saying something.
Yes. I appreciated Melissa being like, you know, your father, the dangerous con man who never, like, you know, like, I love that they're all, like, so blunt about the fact that he sucks so much and don't, like, sugarcoat it because it's her dad, if you know what I mean?
Yeah. And, I mean, it's a cool scene, too, between Melissa and Malia, because those two don't always hang out together, but, like, work very well together. And we already talked about Melissa stabbing Peter with the 9 herbs and, like, God, it was just so great.
I mean, is this just a cure-all now? Like, because last week we had JR, you know, we had Chris Argent, and he was cured from a supernatural poison. Are these burns the same kind of thing? Is it just like Ghost Rider essence, if you know what I mean? Like, is the porthole burns the same kind of problem as the, you know, the whip burns? Like, is that meant to be the same damage?
Initially, I was going to say no, but now that I'm thinking about it, I'm going to say yes, because it's not like he was burned with fire. He was burned with
energy.
Whatever that portal is made out of. And if that energy is the equivalent to what is in the bullets and what is in the whip, then clearly they are related. So I didn't put two and two together before, but yes, I think that they are the same, which is how she knew that concoction was going to work.
Yeah, I will give that a pass. So they had some nice makeup there on our friend Ian Bowen.
Yeah, I liked the way, actually, that it, like, slid off when she injected him and you got to see, like, the new skin underneath. It was so gross, but it was a really cool effect.
Oh, I like how they're like, could only leave him like this for maximum 5 minutes and then we've got to get him pretty again and have his hair grow back. But, you know.
Yeah. Imagine how long it took to put all of that prosthetic makeup on him and then, like, boom, done.
Yeah.
Poor guy. But, you know, he did get pretty again, which is what I care about most.
Yeah.
So, after Peter hits on Melissa, of course, Malia drags him out to where he arrived from the train station, which, another great line, like, oh, I marked it. And he sort of looks at her. I marked it visually.
I love that he's so like, oh my God, can't you just, like, wear a dress and be a normal girl?
Yes.
Like, it's mean, but, like, it's hilarious, like, as well.
It is so great. I loved it.
Yeah, like, later when he's like, can't you at least try to act like a human, about, like, the way she was growling and, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. He's like, oh, my child, so unrefined.
I know, I was just thinking that, like, Peter is kind of refined and, like,
Finicky, you know, posh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to have this wild child, I'm sure, is so aggravating to him, but I like it. They do have good chemistry. They butt heads in a way that is very interesting to watch. Even just, you know, verbally, like the going back and forth and him being like, you have no self-preservation. You are not my daughter, which is something I want to talk about in a minute. But well, now, actually, because the Ghost Riders show up and Peter sacrifices himself to save Malia. And I don't think we're very surprised because we know, no matter what he says, that he left through that portal and kept those keys in his hand because he wanted to help Styles and because he wanted to do something that would make his daughter proud of him. So this just kind of adds another layer to that and is especially important given he was just making fun of her for not having self-preservation. You know, you're, how are you my daughter? You have no self-preservation, except he acts the same way.
Did he actually die or go back, get taken again? Or like, because they kind of just go past him and like you see, because I'm like, oh my God, are we going to get all of that for him just to like die now? But they kind of like, you kind of see him turn. Like, what actually happened to him at the end there?
The other Ghost Rider was in pain. It was when Mr. Douglas attacked it.
Yeah, yeah.
So they heard him yell and they turned around and they left Peter there.
Yeah, but Peter's okay.
Peter is fine.
Okay, good. Good. Just making sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So going forward, I'm going to be interested to see how he's incorporated into the storyline. And, I mean, now there's proof that he was willing to sacrifice himself for Malia as well. You know, he can say all he wants about getting through that portal and, oh, I was just trying to save myself. But he can no longer deny that he sacrificed himself for Malia. And she's going to remember that. And I'm hoping it leads to some pretty good scenes down the road.
Yeah, for sure.
So the other B plot for this episode was Sheriff and Lydia. So at the end of last week, we saw Sheriff peel away the wallpaper and see what was behind it. And I'm pumping my fist over here because I told you guys, telling you guys forever that it was going to be Styles' room.
Were you expecting, and it was like a secret horse barn or something? Like, I don't, like, you know, yes, it was Styles' room.
Well, people had different theories, yeah. So I just, you know, I'm not always right. So okay. It was just fulfilling to have been saying that for a while and seeing that, yes, the door was behind there. He opened it up into this room that was clearly abandoned and Claudia finds him. And she's just like, look, the previous owners probably covered it up. People are weird. Like, don't worry about it. But he can't drop it, especially now. Lydia is really, you know, what she said previously is really starting to get to him. And the fact that Claudia is not even curious, you know, about their potential son and says that they should just leave it alone.
She's like, yeah, this seems normal, perfectly fine, no big deal. Like, yeah.
Yeah, but he can't drop it, which is very interesting. And she sort of just walks away. She doesn't necessarily argue with him, but she's very disappointed. And this kind of ties into Lydia going over to the house and realizing that, like, she's talking to Sheriff, and before she was talking to her mom, and she realizes that Lenore was the one that conjured Caleb, which we had a lot of questions about last week. She conjured Caleb fill the void after the Ghost Riders came through. So Caleb is real. He's present, but he's not supposed to be there. And okay. Lydia is saying that Sheriff did this with Claudia after Styles was taken as a way to cope with this huge void in his life. Even if he didn't know what the void was, he did it to fill that emptiness.
I mean, does that mean anyone can do that, that has stuff taken from them? Because, you know, she was a banshee. She has a connection with death. Mm-hmm. So you would assume that that is how that came from there. Or is it, like, that the Ghost Riders left behind that, like, residue of power to do that and it wasn't to do with her being a banshee? if they think that Claudia is the same for Sheriff.
Yeah, this does confuse me, because when she first started talking about it, I assumed that Lenore was able to conjure Caleb because she was a banshee, but obviously that's not the case if Sheriff was able to conjure Claudia. So what reason could there be? What mechanism allowed him to do that? Maybe it is leftover energy, like with the hallucinations in Kanan, that allowed him to bring her back. But he wasn't there when Stiles was taken. He was close by. He was in the school and they were in the parking lot, but it's not like he necessarily witnessed it in the way that Lydia witnessed it. So I find that very interesting.
I don't know.
My question is, does Claudia know that she's actually dead? Because Lydia says she's hiding a secret. She clearly didn't want them to find the room. So does she know everything that's everything that's going on?
Lydia. Oh, Claudia, sorry.
Claudia.
Is she aware of, yes, Stiles was real and I have to convince this guy that she wasn't? Or is she telling the truth as according to her? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
I want to say that she's knows everything and is evil, but she could just be telling the truth according to her. I don't know. She seems a little bit sinister.
She does. And, like, I also think that she knows everything that's going on, not because she feels sinister, but just because Lydia says she's hiding a secret. And, like, I mean, maybe it's self-preservation in that she knows that if the sheriff remembers he has a son and can get Stiles back, that means she's gone. But I don't know. Like, I guess to what extent is she aware that she doesn't belong there? I think she realizes she doesn't belong there, but does she know that she's dead? Does she know how she died? Does she know that they did have a son and that he's been taken and what will happen when he returns?
Yeah, because Caleb kind of knew he was dead.
And was able to use, like, powers.
Gross magic, yeah.
Yeah.
I still feel like it was put there for the sheriff to kind of keep him complacent, if you know what I mean. But, like, by the Ghost Riders, not, like, you know, not that he was kind of conjuring her up because he was alone. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's all very confusing now.
Well, Lydia remembers Stiles' room, and we see her kind of looking at what used to be there, and we see her pick up his jersey, but when the sheriff looks at her, he can't see it. He's afraid to remember Stiles, afraid that Claudia isn't real, and how much that's going to change his life, I'm sure. But he catches the jersey when Lydia throws it at him at the end. So I'm wondering if next week, perhaps, depending on if we pick up the storyline where we left off, if he'll be able to confront Claudia and if we'll learn the truth. Like, this is so far just Lydia's speculation that the sheriff conjured her. Doesn't necessarily mean that's the case. Maybe the Ghost Riders did purposely put her there. Hopefully we find out soon.
Yeah, I don't know. I can kind of see it all coming crashing down in terms of, like, have you been lying to me? It's like, you know, all of this stuff. It's like, no, don't you like our lives the way they are? And, you know, some sort of confrontation. But it's, like, because that makes it more black and white that, like, yes, we can get rid of Claudia in order to, you know, and it's not really sad. It's like, you're a bad guy and off you go. It's sort of sadder if kind of she's innocent in it. You know, and she's just telling the truth according to her. And that it's like, do I have to choose between my innocent wife and my innocent son?
Yeah. What if he chooses Claudia?
Yeah. I don't think he will. I mean, maybe he will. I don't know. That would be sad and mean.
It would be sad. I mean, Dylan can't come back. That would anger a lot of people, though. So, I don't know. But very cool how they did the jersey scene. I really liked it. I like that Lydia is so invested in this. She knows without actually knowing. She has this feeling, this belief, this faith, and she's sort of running with it. And for the sheriff, it's a lot harder to do that, but he's definitely coming around, and I think he's aware that something is just slightly off.
I really loved the whole scene. Like, I found it very emotional, and I sort of got teary at different points, like when she first sees, mm-hmm. like, the whiteboard and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, the conversation, and when he sees, like, I see a very disturbed girl, and, like, cause she does look freaking crazy.
Yeah, she does.
That whole scene, like, basically everything in the bedroom there was really brilliant and sad. And I don't know, it's... you know, I like that he's like, if you want to have a conversation about this, I'm listening, and like she closes the door, and the whole thing playing out was really great. So I really, really love that. Very sad.
Yeah. Very sad, very emotional, but it really hits home, and I'm glad that they're having this conversation because Sheriff needs to sort of wake up to what's going on, and I think it's going to cause some problems, but hopefully it gets them one step closer to finding Styles. But that was pretty much it for this episode's discussion. Did you have anything else?
No, let me have a quick look at my phone, my notes. Oh, yes, basically the decision, like when they come back in, when the guys come back in and find Theo after the Douglas disappears, and they have that argument about not believing him, you know, about like, you're going back in the ground now, and then they're like, hang on, he ate the pineal gland, that's been happening, like, you know, they think Theo's lying because he has that smear of blood on his face. They basically think that Theo was lying and covering up, and because when, you know, when Douglas comes in and attacks the guy and then leaves, I'm like, oh no, they're going to think Theo betrayed him. And then they come back in and he's like, no, it was Mr. Douglas. And Liam is the one then being like, right, this was a mistake. You're going back in the ground, I think. And Scott's kind of questioning, you know, what's happened. And then I think it's Mason that says, no, like, this has been happening since before Theo. This is probably... true. So they now know Mr. Douglas is probably evil.
Yes.
Yep. And they don't put Theo back in the ground, presumably, but there was a moment when I was like, they're going to think he betrayed them and he's going to have to convince them, and I was really sad for him.
Yeah. I wonder if next week is going to be the flashback for Mr. Douglas. We didn't get to see the promo for next week, so... complete speculation, but like it would, now that they're aware that Mr. Douglas is evil, that would fall in line, I think, with the narrative.
Yeah.
To get that information.
Could be. Correct. So, I don't know. Yeah, that was the only other thing that I was sort of thinking about, that whole moment of
poor Theo.
Yeah. In terms of feedback, we just got an email, a fairly long one, that I'll read from Brittany Koza, unless there's anything else you wanted to add. And this is a discussion about The Wild Hunt, basically. Wild Hunt thoughts from Brittany Koza. I noticed that you guys keep referring to this as an alternate universe or saying in this universe. I don't think it's that case. I don't think that's the case at all. If the people being taken by The Wild Hunt were being erased, the situation would be more Wishverse or Birthdayverse in Buffy and Angel. Buffy never coming to Sunnydale, or Angel, spoiler warning, Cordelia never meeting up with Angel in LA, caused huge differences to the worlds of those shows. If Styles had never existed, the world of Beacon Hills would have been vastly different. For instance, Scott probably wouldn't have been a werewolf. However, Beacon Hills isn't different from what we know. We do see that even though the victims have forgotten, the impact they had on the world is still there. Instead of Scott never getting the bite, he just doesn't really remember the circumstances that led to the bite and knows something is off, which means this isn't an alternate reality universe. By taking someone, it's like The Wild Hunt causes a wound and covers it with a flesh-coloured band-aid to hide it. If someone happens to notice the band-aid and picks at it long enough, the wound will be exposed again. In Styles' case, I think The Wild Hunt screwed up. The wound they caused by taking Stiles was like slicing a blood vessel. No amount of bandages is going to cover it for long. Instead, they have to stitch it first. That's why we have Claudia. Her presence stops the wound from spurting, allowing the bandages to hide it better. Thanks for reading my long metaphor. I hope it works for you guys. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. Yes, so the first part of that, the first paragraph, we totally agree with you. We know that it's not like a universe where that person never existed. It's that they're trying to hide the fact, you know, they're trying to hide the fact that that person never existed. We totally, totally get that and have definitely compared it to the whole, you know, what would have happened in the universe without the influence of those people before. But your, you know, your gross bandage metaphor is probably very accurate.
Yes,
but it's
very
just,
good.
Just a matter of whether Claudia is done like that from the psyche of Sheriff, or if it's placed by the Ghost Riders as the, you know, the stitching there themselves, because they realise they made too much of a rift, basically. The final thing that I had as well was earlier this week, we released on Hyperball an article of most anticipated moments of 2017. And in mine, I just wanted to, you know, give a shout out basically to that article and to, you know, talk about in mine, I talked about for 2017, for the most anticipated in TV, you know, the full finale of Teen Wolf, like the fact that the show is ending, and that while we obviously are sad about that, that I am really anticipating seeing how it all wraps up at the very end of the day, you know, when they actually finish it up in April or May. Yeah, so that was sort of something that it didn't really occur to me till writing that was going to be a big moment in television later in the year. And I guess we've talked about a little bit before, like what we'd like at the very end. But like sort of 7 episodes into season 6 now, is there anything so far that you feel very strongly about, you know, the show ending on?
I feel as though I will be happiest if the pack, which is formed out of whomever is left, hopefully everybody, is a strong one in that, like, who knows, maybe Peter and Theo will be part of the pack and maybe they will be perfectly fine taking orders from Scott. Even if Scott leaves, you know, it'd be nice to see them sort of sticking around and being a part of this hodgepodge pack that Scott has built out of all these different supernatural creatures. And I also really want, like, really, really want the finale to feel open-ended. Not that I don't want all the answers, but I don't want it to be like, this is the end. I just want it to be like, you know, goodbye for now. We're heading off in this new direction. And it'll give us plenty to kind of speculate about and hope for. And not that I think, like, Teen Wolf is ever going to come back after this, but I don't want it to be like
that it can exist out there in the space.
Yeah, yeah, that, like, Scott kind of walks off into the sunset and you know that he's going to college and we can think about what he's going to do at college and who he's going to meet. And, you know, I don't want it to be a closed door. I want it to be a slightly ajar door where we can kind of peek in every once in a while and be like, I wonder what they're doing now.
Fair enough. Very good. Do you think that Stiles will end up being in the back end of the season, or do you think that this story will kill him off?
I really don't know, but I will tell you that I hope that he's there because it's not going to be the same without him, you know? It wouldn't be the same. Back to what I was just saying, in other words, like, I don't want Scott to suddenly get the cure for being a werewolf, be a totally normal person, and, like, we're done. Like, yeah. That's the end of his story.
I don't
as
think that's going to be what happens.
No, I don't think so either. But that versus him continuing to be a werewolf and just like heading off in a new direction. Like, that's what I hope for, to be slightly open-ended and like the story can continue if it wanted to.
I hope Peter finds his true calling as the drama teacher at the high school. I was thinking about this really intensely last night for some reason. Oh, another shout out to this episode as well was I really loved, you know, we've had real trouble with Natalie Martin this season. Speaking of drama teachers in the high school, real trouble with Natalie Martin. But in Lydia's plotline in this episode, I really loved that like scene of them lying on the bed together, hanging out and like talking, you know, like because, you know, she sort of turned from being quite difficult. You know, back to her relationship with Lydia, which always was always very, like, even to me. Like, they were very kind of sassy to each other, and she clearly encouraged Lydia's potential. And them being there, you know, she's invited, she's like, okay, give me your theories if this is really what you think. And they're carrying on with that, and now they're discussing the, you know, the actual potential that, you know, Lydia had. And Natalie is like, you know, well, if that's true, I don't want to be the one to tell him that, you know. But I really loved that, like, kind of relationship of equals, and Natalie Martin being portrayed a bit better than the weirdness going on at the beginning of the season, because I really like them together.
So do I, and I completely agree that, like, in the beginning, you guys know how much I really despised her because she was being very ignorant to what was going on around her, and it wasn't even that she was ignoring it. She was actively working against them.
She reminded me a little bit of, like, when we've been rewatching Buffy, it's been really frustrating. Maybe it's because we come from, you know, Teen Wolf, where the adults are not unreasonable. But the way that Joyce kind of acts on Buffy with Buffy when she's kind of like, can't you just, you know, not do that? Or like kind of, who cares if you're out saving the world? You forgot to pick up the dry cleaning. You're so irresponsible, Buffy. You know, like that kind of like really horrible, like dismissive attitude of like, wow, this is really unreasonable and ridiculous because she doesn't take it seriously. So it kind of reminded me a little of that. And that wasn't always what she was like. Like, you know, we obviously saw a lot of her before she, you know, knew what was going on, and her relationship with Lydia was still very equal. But I really loved that lead-up scene to Lydia going to talk to the sheriff, like, of them together on the bed.
Because she's still skeptical, which I appreciate. She's still like, I don't actually think Claudia is dead. Like, are you sure about this? She hasn't changed so, like, easily that she's completely on board with everything that Lydia says. But she's listening to Lydia, and that's something that she hasn't been doing for quite some time. And the fact that she's lying there being open about it and saying, I'm not sure that's the case, but if you feel really strongly about that, like, maybe you should do something about it. And it's just a much better relationship than it has been.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it.
Yeah. Anyway, yes.
The
drama teacher. It made me, for some reason. I was like, oh, yeah, remember when Peter hit on her too? Yeah, good times. But, yeah. Oh, dear. Yes. But, so that was just that other little tidbit, but yeah, mm-hmm. In terms of the end, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's gonna be hard either way, but
I might have to take a day off work and just like deal with that.
How do you guys feel about like a 5-hour podcast after the finale where we just sit here and cry?
No, I think it will be a live stream, maybe.
Really?
A video live stream, though they've stopped doing it so easily on Google Hangouts, they've changed it again, so yeah.
We'll see. No, I don't want to live stream because I will actually cry.
Yeah, that's good. That's good for people to see you cry.
Interesting.
Okay, fine. We'll think about it.
Tell us what you want. Yeah. We'll probably do it.
Still a while to go, but only 13. So only 13 episodes. So this is.
Don't tell me that. Seven,
and then we're almost halfway through the season. I'm not sure how much of a gap there'll be, like, you know, obviously it's not a full season break, but I don't know if there'll be a small hiatus, like, where the production's caught up to at the moment. Like, are they filming currently?
I think so.
Yeah.
I just put my hood over my head and covered my eyes when you said we only had 13 episodes left.
I'm sorry. You're just going to have to come to terms with it.
Natalie, you're too much of a realist for me sometimes.
I started you a whole other podcast to transition.
This is true. Oh, goodness. Right. Okay, we need to wrap this up.
Okay, it's going to be okay. We're going to get through it. And then next Comic-Con, we won't have Teen Wolf there, but we will have Teen Wolf Funkos.
Yeah! Oh my god.
Yeah.
Gonna buy them all.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll go to Comic-Con specifically to cover the release of Teen Wolf Funkos.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyway, you know, it's not a show, but it's something. Alright. We'll see you guys later, next week, for Blitzkrieg, which, as we mentioned, is probably the flashback episode to Mr. Douglas, given the title and given the fact that he is from the Second World War, that would be a likely
assumption. Oh, and this is the episode Will said is going to be brutal.
Cool. That's really fun. Thanks, Will.
Great. Thanks, Will.
We'll see what we can do about that.
Thanks, Will is our thanks, Obama.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. So let's look forward to that. And, yeah, we'll see you guys then. So until then, bye-bye.
Bye.
Five, four, three, two, one. The gun is gone, and so am I, and here I go.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.